Okay, giving this a try. Let's see if we get it right on the first try. Usually, I know you don't know this, but it usually takes us 2 or 3 times.
Yep, but that's all right.
But, locked back in the secret hidden vault.
Secret vault?
Yes, in downtown Charlotte Harbor, Florida. Once again comes the revelation that we are here.
No matter where you go, you're always there.
Yeah, except for lately, I haven't been anywhere I thought I was.
Nice.
I keep getting these hallucinations that, you know, I'm actually... Well, to be quite honest, it's not exactly fair for me to say either, because I would say most of the time I'd rather be here at Fish and Frank's than almost anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually true.
Yeah. Better than half the time, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool nowadays. You know, we've got the big wide open store, and Robert's going to be doing Tuesdays his State of the Fish address. Every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, and there'll be free coffee, and we're going to have some breakfast sandwich stuff that, you know, Joe, our hot dog guy, is going to do, and so there'll be a nominal fee for... Nominal?
Yep.
A small fee for that kind of stuff, but, you know, he's in business, yep. You know, he does pay rent here, he gives me a hot dog a day.
Nice.
So... You know, but he's got, sometimes I splurge and get him to give me a bratwurst.
Yeah. There you go.
I up the rent every once in a while too. Okay, Joe, no, I want a bratwurst.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's been kind of fun.
It is. A lot of new faces coming in. I mean, there's just between the snowbird wintertime visitors, but a lot of people moving to the area. Or the snowbirds have family visiting that are thinking about moving to the area. So it's cool to have an interaction with all these different people from all these different walks of life that are interested in the fishing around here. So it's pretty cool.
I think, and some of the most fun, I was talking to some people from Orlando yesterday. We just had a ball. There was a mom, dad, and a couple of kids, and the dad and I were talking, and we're both interested in antiques and, you know, different stuff. And we just had a ball talking. You know, there was a guy from another shop here in town in the other day, and he's like, well, you know, I'll see you at ICAST and all this kind of stuff. And I said, man, I don't care about ICAST anymore. I don't, you know, I've got most of the stock I want. What I don't want, you know, I look for specific things that I do want. And sometimes I can find them at ICAST, but I go to ICAST like to help somebody design something, and to be quite honest, I get a little inebriated. You know, I get a little tipsy. Actually, I get a lot tipsy, but I run around, talk to people, have a good time, you know, to chat and see how everybody's doing. And other than that, you know, if I happen to walk by something, but the truth is, I'm rather jaded on picking tackle.
Right.
Oh, gee, it's another soft plastic. How freaking wonderful. Oh, gee, it's exactly like the DOA lure, but the package is, and you know, it's got a different name on the package, but really it's a copy of Mark's lure.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, God, I'm supposed to be excited about that? Give me a break, you know? And then I look at, you know, we get... So if I actually want to buy tackle when I go to those things... The truth is, Robert and I take people who haven't been there before and watch and see what they get excited about.
Right.
that's actually how we do it.
Makes it a lot easier.
Because, you know, after you've done literally dozens upon dozens of trade shows and tackle shows, and we were attending, what, 4 or 5 a year for a while there?
Yeah.
And, you know... Robert's been doing it 20-some years now. I've been doing it 30-some years. And if it's kind of like walking into a bakery, and it's your favorite bakery, and you really like it, but you kind of got it narrowed down to a few things that, you know, you want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you've got this amazing selection of everything, and then, but yeah, you've seen it a thousand times.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, and the other aspect of it too is that it's a cool item to see and get excited about sometimes, but more often than not, it either is just showcased and then never comes out, or the company goes out of business in the first year. And then you're like, well, I had something really cool. So it's hard to get excited about something until it's been out for a little while to see if it's even going to make it.
Well, and, you know, I was talking to him, and because, you know, I'm a bit different. And, you know, he was saying something. I said, listen, the only thing that's good about this business, the fishing industry, is the people you deal with, the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Not the people we have to buy from, although some of them are amazingly cool. I mean, you've got AFW, Rapala, Pure Fishing,
DOA,
Strike King, you know, but it's pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vast majority of them are kind of a pain to deal with, or it's a straight out business negotiation. You know, there's no getting to know them, having fun, or anything else. But, you know, you've got the few, like you say, Strike King, DOA, all these that we really enjoy dealing with. We have
right.
a ball. We, you know, we get together. We have a lot of fun. It's business and personal relationship combined. But a bunch of it isn't.
Right.
And the last and only, the one really cool thing is the people who come in the door, like you started talking about in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There's just... they're fun. They're amazing. You know, we have
Absolutely.
Just a ball with the customers, and you know, outside of the few, you know, and you know, it's not to say it's not good, but I mean, it's all about, can you live on this much margin?
Right.
You know, can you, you know, be this the price with Amazon and Walmart and these other chain stores and all that stuff? Can you price compete with them and live on that percentage? That's what's tough.
Right.
Like we always said, this would be the perfect job if it paid a little better.
Exactly. It would be.
But speaking of the perfect job, I don't know if it's the perfect place, but let's start up on the Peace River plug. See what's going on up there. I don't have any reports from up there. I don't know anything going on.
Everything went downhill since the full moon. I haven't gotten any good reports since middle, early last week.
All right, let's go on to I-75.
Same thing there. It got quiet. The couple guys that were up there fishing have said that they haven't been catching anything to speak of consistently. It's really bizarre.
41 Bridge.
That's a little better. Okay. Getting a few more reports there. There's been a few small trout around the power lines. And then there's been some snook, some juvenile tarpon, and some black drum underneath the 41 Bridge. Most of the time it's been right at first light in the morning or right in the evening into the nighttime. Even a couple of those guys that have been there have been catching those 25-pound black drum at night. I haven't heard of too many during the day. Well, that's a little off on that. Kind of neat, but definitely a little strange.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, and a gentleman the other day was asking me how come the sheep's head don't stack up there. And I really didn't have a good enough answer for him. But, I mean, in all the years, sheep's head have never been incredible around the 41 Bridge.
I can honestly tell you, when I first moved here and we had the flat bridges,
mm-hmm.
the ones before these,
right?
The sheep head fishing was awesome.
Now, part of those creosote pilings or was it all concrete?
It was... you know, you ever see those flat bridges with the big, thick concrete rails on each side, and then they have arches underneath?
Oh, yeah, like down in the Keys.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what the bridge kind of looked like. There was some pilings, there was some arches.
Okay.
And what they used to do was build kind of a, you know, one of those keystone arches,
mm-hmm.
and that was poured, and then they just filled it with rock and dirt.
Okay.
And that was the weight that held it there.
Okay.
But it was... phenomenal black drum, sheephead, everything used to hang out there. But I think the biggest detriment to the sheephead fishing there is the amount of car traffic.
Okay.
Those pilings vibrate and rumble all day long. And yeah. I mean, it's noisy, noisy, noisy. I mean, you're fishing under it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's loud.
Absolutely.
In the air. Underwater, it's got to be, what?
Oh, yeah.
500 times that loud.
Yeah.
And you've got those little square pilings, but it just, maybe it's the vibration on them or something. The amount of noise that goes through there, for some reason or another, you would think the snook would just evacuate that area. But somehow or another, they've kind of gotten used to it. And even the black drum are starting to come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really honestly don't know. It's the worst guess I've had, just the noise, but...
That's the most plausible, though. I mean, out of all the things I've tried thinking of, that didn't even cross my mind.
And it could be the vibration. Let's forget it as noise. Let's just call it vibration.
Right.
And if you're trying to chew on the barnacles and the oysters and it's literally vibrating on your teeth,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's just uncomfortable. Let's forget noise and go to vibration.
I like that as a concept.
And that would be the better guess, if I had to, that the vibration on the pilings is just... Because Placida, there's more on the trestle than there is on the bridges.
Right.
And
same thing as Eljo Bean.
While you have more, less car traffic there, you get a lot more at Eljo Bean.
Mm-hmm.
But we see wherever there's not cars running on a bridge, higher concentrations of the sheephead.
Okay.
And I'm going to rule out the noise because the snook tend to hang out there and black drums still tend to hang out there. So it can't be actual noise, but let's say it's the vibrating of the pilings themselves. It makes it uncomfortable for the sheephead to chew on the barnacles.
That makes sense. Because they feed entirely different than all those other fish, so I could see that actually affecting them more so.
Well, I can tell you, I got one of those vibrating toothbrush electric ones.
Mm-hmm.
And the first few times I used it, oh my God, that's horrible.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it, you know, eventually you kind of grow used to it. But that's where the idea came from, is me trying to get, you know, my teeth are yellowed because I smoke and I drink coffee all day and all that kind of stuff. So, I, you know, trying to look a little better, you know, make myself feel a little better, you know, okay, I look in the mirror and I don't quite feel so nasty hillbilly. You know, not that hillbilly's a bad thing. I could actually do that lifestyle, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I remember trying to use that vibrating toothbrush and how much it actually, it literally was weird to painful almost. Not really painful, but just unbelievably...
uncomfortable.
Exactly. Now, the more I did it, the more I got used to it. But if you're a sheephead and you have another option, why would you even want to try and get used to it?
Right. No, that makes sense. I like that idea. It's a good plausible concept.
Yeah, I'll go along with that one. I was having a hard time with the noise one because so many other fish didn't bother by the noise.
Right.
But when you break it down, noise is nothing but vibration.
Right.
And vibrating barnacles probably are just not fun to eat.
Probably a little trickier to get a hold of, and it might have something to do with their structure of their teeth and everything else getting up against that, trying to bite onto it.
Well, it's more like a toothbrush on the high vibration mode, you know, where it's where it would be uncomfortable. It's not like vibration, like moving side to side.
Right.
But just, anyway, so Lashley Pure.
I got nothing there this week. Pretty quiet, unfortunately, with that one.
I guess it was a good thing we were a little chatty today, because this could be a very short report.
Right.
Bayshore Pier?
Bayshore Pier, a couple of guys have caught a couple of the small bull sharks, one black tip, and then there has been a couple of incidental trout coming through there. Then at night, they've been catching a couple of snook and a couple of ladyfish. Been a handful of guys still enjoying it and fishing down there, so not a bad thing.
No, we spent so many months talking about nothing on Bayshore, and then it came back, you know, whether you could actually get back out on them, and there was still nothing to talk about. It's nice having something to talk about on Bayshore.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Old nostalgic pier. How many times that burned down?
Oh, four? Gosh. At least. At least.
Port Charlotte canals.
Oh, let's see. Depending on who you talk to, the mouths of the canals have been where it's at. The jacks, some black drum, been a few redfish being caught over there on the by the beach complex at the entrance to all those canals. And then the mangrove snapper bite started to pick back up a little bit. So it's been not bad. Not great, but not bad. Still pretty lousy behind the house. But I took home some two rattle traps and some fish bites last night for the girlfriend for Valentine's Day. And she kind of got excited, wanted to talk about them and try to figure out how to use them and stuff. And I was surprised that I hadn't given her a rattle trap before to try out, because I know how well they work on everything. So here, we'll see how she does with that.
Well, the one thing about a rattle trap, it's one of the lures that you're throwing it the first cast or two to try and entice the fish to bite.
Mm-hmm.
And after the second cast, it's about annoying the fish to bite.
Yeah.
It's not about, okay, oh, this is a cool bait and you really want to eat it. It's about getting one of them to bite it to shut it up.
Yeah.
It's the annoyance factor after that. And it's one of the few lures that you can actually cast under a dock, under a dock, under a dock, and expect after, you know, 5, 10, 15 casts to actually catch something. Mm-hmm. Because they're biting it to shut it up.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Your first cast or two is all about trying to entice the fish into biting. And I'm usually retrieving it a little slower on my first couple of casts.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm pretty sure there's fish there, then I'm going to speed the thing up just a little bit and then just keep chunking it in there. And just chunking in there, in there, in there, in there. And okay, you're going to get tired of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Elder bean?
Oh, let's see. Elder bean's had some sheep's head on it. They're starting to thin out just a little bit, though. There's been a few trout being caught there also. And then there's also been a handful of nice snook. Actually, during the daytime, a couple of guys have been catching a couple nice-sized snook there during the day, along with at nighttime. Other than that, it's been a little on the quiet side for your other species, but kind of cool when you've got several different guys show you pictures of snook off of it with their picture during the day.
Well, the one thing I can say is two things we need to... I don't know if we get a petition together or what. I'm not much of a, you know, I've always been one of those, I would never want to join a group that would have me for a member, in the words of Groucho Marx. But, you know, if we could get to make no commercial landing a mullet for the next 2 years, and on the west coast of Florida, the east coast, no. But from... I'm going to say Sanibel to Tampa, mm-hmm. You know, at least on, you know, so you have to make it where they have to travel far enough where it's not worth the gas money.
Right.
But if we could do that, and then let's raise the size limit on cobia up to 48 inches, and let's raise the minimum snook size up to 40. And let's get rid of the small capture of cobia at 33, 34. Let's go right to 48 inches. In a year, there'll be plenty of 48-inch cobia. Let's start targeting the bigger fish that allow every fish to breed at least once or twice, or in the case of a snook, they would have bred 10 times. You know, and let's start taking the older stock out, and let's go more trophy, less normal fish, because to be quite honest, while catching a 30-inch snook is fun, it's not like catching a 40-inch snook.
Right.
So, true. Those are two fish I know I would like to see up. The cobia, no, nothing less than 48 inches. If we're going to get them, let's get good ones. With the snook, they only live 25 years. So let's allow them all those years of breeding, making babies and stuff. And then as they get old, back in the day when we were catching those 40-inch snook, we found a lot of the eggs weren't brightly colored. They'd have green mixed in with them. They're just not as viable of a breeder as some of the younger ones. They can still do it, and they produce a lot of eggs, but right, they're not a lot of wonderful.
No.
So let's give every snook a chance to get old. And it's kind of like I keep going back to, if I died right now, it's not a big deal. I've had a very interesting life. Mm-hmm. And all that. But if my son died, he's got kids, you know, let him get to be my age. And a 40-inch snook, in human terms, would be in its 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
Or 70s or 80s.
Something, you know, like that.
Whatever.
It's up but there.
It's old. So let's start thinking of them that way. You know, not taking the babies. Myakka River area.
Well, let's see. I haven't heard much upriver this week except for a handful of tarpon, but the guy said they are not cooperating at all and have thinned out significantly. But over there to Tippecanoe and the north end of the cutoff, they're still getting some snook and a few redfish in there and a handful of small trout. It's been a little quiet in there because it's been so blooming hot and low tide with the full moon last week that not nearly as many people were able to get in there as that wanted to. So I think that's part of the reason for the hodgepodge fishing reports. Between warm weather and full moon, it's really kind of made a mess of things. It's been quite interesting.
Well, I know there's a lot of sand bream back in the Tippy area. Mm-hmm. Like you say, the snook are doing well, some redfish, but it's an interesting area. But when the tides get low, it's another area where if eco nuts and these, you know, environmental weirdos would just take a moment to actually think and allow us to go in there and dig out some deep areas back there, make some cuts, you know, and allow the water flow to pick up and put some deep water holes back in there. And it takes a backhoe and a dredge. It's not a very invasive thing considering it's all methane muck.
Right.
You know, it's not good bottom. But if we clean some of it out and made better habitat, you'd have a huge amount of fish.
Oh, yeah.
And the viability over the summer when the water gets so hot and it loses the oxygen, you would have so many more fish survive, so many more fish survive the cold winters. And we need to do that on all the creeks and all these little bays and inlets where nature just can't do anymore, mostly because the artesian springs that created the creeks and these lakes and ponds don't flow anymore.
Right.
So allow us to do what nature used to be able to do. Let's just help nature. I'm not talking about modifying, I'm just talking about helping it get back to the way it was. And it's not that hard, and it's not terribly expensive if you don't, you know, hire government contractors, you know?
Right.
Hire normal people with normal wages and not mobilization fees. When I was contracting for the feds, they paid mileage and, you know, my daily rate, whether I was driving to the job or coming back. I didn't get my mileage, my daily rate, and a mobilization fee. I think right. That's a ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way government runs, and it's just because their buddies figured out another word to add in there to get more money out of the job. And they look stupid. So, anyway, South Gulf Cove canals.
I got nothing.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
Okay. West Wall. We got anything there?
Yeah, there's a hodgepodge of redfish and snook moving up and down the whole thing. And then there's also been a handful of trout and some small sharks on top of the bar and on the outside edge of the bar. The small sharks have mostly been bull sharks with a couple of black tips from what one of the pictures looked like. So it's a little bit of a mixed barrage over there. One guy did see a big tarpon go slowly cruising past him while he was out there drifting the flats. He thought he saw some pompano skip and was looking back in the area trying to see if he could find them. And he said it was probably about 70, 80 pounds. He said it was over 4 foot long as it just kind of just slowly just went creeping by. He said it was really pretty elegant to watch. I'm like, that's cool. I like seeing all that kind of stuff. Sometimes catching the fish is an absolute blast, but sometimes just seeing fish act kind of naturally, I guess, is sometimes pretty fascinating to see.
I can't tell you how many times in the middle of a charter we would just stop the boat when you had a little bit more water and it was real clean on top of the sandbar on the east side or west side. And I would just shut the boat off and tell everybody to stand up and just look into the water. And all of a sudden they see bonnet sharks and trout. And they would see all these amazing fish and stingrays. And, I mean, just bottom creatures. And it was just, it was shocking.
Yeah.
Guys who were, you know, especially there with their family and everybody. And they'd be looking at me like, what do you mean we're not going to fish? I said, nope, no poles, just... We're going to drift the boat here for, it's only going to take about 8 minutes, but we're just going to drift for a bit. And I need you guys to look in the water and see what's possible. And all of a sudden, they're, oh, look at this, oh, look at that. And they would just freak out. And yeah. Even some of the hardcore fishermen had never bothered to stop and do that.
Yeah.
Would get such a kick out of it. And because now you're seeing... As the boat's drifting up, we're not spooking them, we're not, you know, and then all of a sudden at the last minute you do, and you watch them, you know, puff the sand out, and they'd say, see that sand puff? Now you know what it looks like. That's what it looks like when a fish takes off scared or excited, and we did the wrong thing. Or you're waving your arms, or you're, you know, and so when we get to the next spot, this is what you have to remember, you know, what did you do to scare that fish, or was it just the boat, you know? And we could catch more fish once they understood what the fish were going through as they saw the boat or the shadows of the people and stuff like that. And it actually, they were catching more fish after that. So nice. It was kind of cool.
Right. And I can see that. That's super cool. One of my coolest things ever was seeing that stuff was drifting, was tarpon fishing out there by Boca along the beach. Mm-hmm. And we went to Johnson Shoals. And... We were out quite a ways, but still on that real shallow bar. And there was a shelf of live sand dollars.
Yeah.
Like hundreds.
Thousands.
Just like, I'm like, what is all this? You know, it was kind of dark. And then we got into a little bit shallower water. And it was just, you could see, it looked like a treasure chest, you know, with coins. You know, you started looking at it real close. And it was like, oh my God. Gosh, it was just so amazing to see that.
Okay. I just forgot I had to go make a minor repair there for a minute. But anyway, you were talking about drifting along, and here's hundreds, if not thousands, of sand dollars just covering the bottom of the...
Yeah. Yeah, and that's my second... coolest memory of just drifting around and observing things, but my number one most favorite memory was one of the first times you took me down to Pine Island Sound just to show me the different potholes, and just really, it wasn't really even fishing, it was literally you were teaching me the bottom down there and showing me the fish shacks and just kind of, you're playing tour guide, but teaching me, but cruising along and following that like 5 or 6 foot long spotted eagle ray. That was just like, still to this day, is just so vivid in my mind. And every time I see one of those, I reflect back on that and just so super cool.
I think one of the neatest things to do is learn how to follow sea creatures without freaking them out.
Right.
And up on the river, I had a boat where I could, remember when I would come up and I called it gator tailing, because I would take the boat in a little pontoon boat and a little four stroke on it, and I would get behind an alligator watching their head so that they didn't see me come up behind them, and I would literally get the tail of the swimming alligator to go between the two pontoons right where, and I'd have, you know, you guys standing on the front,
right,
and then all of a sudden it would notice, oh my God, there's a boat right there, and freak about, and you'd actually get wet from them just splashing the water trying to get the hell out of the way. They were right. In no danger whatsoever. I was in complete control, but
right,
it just was,
yeah, that was neat,
funny as heck watching them and learning to do that with stingrays and other creatures, and you know, all these things where you can get behind them or around them and learning where's the distance, what's the speed, how do you do it, and it was just a lot of fun to be able to figure those things out.
Absolutely.
And you know,
so enjoyable.
Yeah, I wasn't the best fishing guide ever. I was a good fishing guide, but I was definitely a bit different.
Right.
That was about the only thing I could say about my career as a charter boat captain, is I was at least a little different. But mm-hmm. I just enjoyed learning the habits of the fish, because the more you know about their habits, what scares them, what doesn't scare them, whether it's an alligator, a stingray, a trout, or a snook, or whatever it would be, the more likely you are to have good days fishing.
Yeah.
But if all you ever do is just fish, you don't get the other part of the experience, and you don't learn why did it go wrong.
Right.
And, you know, why did it go right is one, you know, is a great question, but why did it go wrong can be the difference between getting paid and not getting paid, because if I didn't catch fish, I didn't charge.
Right.
And I really wanted to catch fish. And I'm not talking about, okay, you caught a 4-inch mangrove snapper, now you got to pay. I mean, we didn't have a reasonably good day, I didn't get paid. And so that was challenging.
Oh, absolutely.
So anyway, K-Pays, Muddy Bay?
Muddy Bay's the only thing I've got some reports on. K-Pays have been super quiet, but Muddy Bay's had a lot of snook in it and quite a few redfish. One guy said he thought it was a small sawfish, but he was having a real hard time seeing it drifting along through the flats in there. But he said it was either that or possibly one of those guitar fish, but he just couldn't see it quite well enough to make it out.
Right.
So that was kind of cool to hear.
Bull Bay, Turtle Bay.
That's definitely better of all. Trout. An oddball few bonnethead sharks. Lots of snook, lots of redfish. Ladyfish started to move in there in a little bit better numbers. And then the sheep's head have been along the shoreline up underneath the mangroves and also around the shacks there at Bull Bay. And the sheep's head are starting to thin out a little bit, but they seem to be getting bigger. A lot of guys have been telling me all over the place from 16 inches up to 21 inches so far is the biggest one I've heard of. And in there, they've all been like that 16 to 19 inch range. So it's kind of nice to hear.
Okay. Let's see if, yeah, there we go. I forget. I can't hear out of my one ear, so if I don't have my headphones on the right side, it sounds like we're really quiet.
Right.
God, I gotta clean this up. Okay. K-Pays, Danger Reef?
Nothing.
Okay. Gasparilla Sound?
Let's see. Lots of snook and redfish along the shorelines, along with a few sheep's head up against those shorelines. And then some of the little oyster patches right there, kind of closer to Wooden Creek and behind Sandfly area. Been a lot of sheep's head and a few redfish on them. If you move out to a little bit deeper water, there's been, pardon me, trout, ladyfish, a few bluefish, and had a couple reports of some Spanish mackerel in there too. There's a lot of little bait in there, and the pinfish have really moved in really, really good. So guys have been using some of those for the snook and the redfish, and said that the white bait, even if they catch it, they're just getting ignored with most of it.
I think that goes back along with they're trying to chum too much.
I disagree with that.
It started happening a few years ago where if you threw a lot of bait out there, you had a lot of hits on the freebie baits, but almost none on the ones on the line. And the better captains are learning that you cast your lines out first, get your baits in the water, and then with ones, twos, and threes for chummers, toss them over by where your bait is.
Right.
And get your baits in there. Get them so that, you know, see if they're going to get hit without the chumming. And if you get hit, you're doing good. If you're not getting hit, then it's about very small bits of chum here and there so that they don't have this amazing selection of, okay, that one or that one or that one, because then your odds go down. If you throw four pieces of bait on a hook out and then you throw 100 pieces of chum out, you've got four chances out of 100 they're going to hit your bait.
Right.
You got... that's not even 5%. You get a 4% chance of getting your bait hit. 4%.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not very good odds.
Yeah, it drastically reduces the odds. It 100% increases the odds of seeing a lot of fish blowing up. But if you're going to be doing that massive chumming, you've got to keep your baits there, ready to cast. When a fish blows up, cast on the blow up.
Right.
And it's got to happen quick because you've only got few seconds to get your bait where that fish hit that other one, or you're not getting hit. Because like I say, you got a 4% chance, you got 4 out of 100 pieces, and people say, well, they're always hitting the chummers, not the other ones. I said, well, how much chum did you throw? Oh man, I must have put 100 pieces of bait out there. So how many lines do you have out? 2?
Yeah.
So you got a 2% chance of getting hooked up?
Yeah.
Let's... you know, okay, I'm sorry, it's called calculator logic.
Yep.
If, yeah, the chum will increase the amount of hits you get, but only if it's proportional to the amount of baits you have out there.
Absolutely.
I know nobody wants to think that way. They want to think, oh, I throw all this chum out there and I'm magically going to get my, you know, my bait's going to get hit. Yeah, well, okay. No. You can get to the point where the odds literally are against you.
Mm-hmm.
Lemon Bay.
We skipped over Placida.
I don't know.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
Placida.
Placida is really, really good with sheep's head right now. And there's also been a few redfish around the old broken down boat access only pilings. And all of the docks there on the north end of Boca and around Little Gasparilla Island, all those docks are holding some really nice redfish. And they're catching them on shrimp. They're catching them on pinfish. A couple guys did really good on the gulp. But the, you know, the weird part is guys are catching them on pink and electric chicken.
Wow.
The new penny, eh. Okay, root beer, been sporadically good in the clear water, which is odd, but I had a guy buy the, which is why I bought it for the girlfriend last night, the electric chicken and the fish bites, because he's been buying the electric chicken and the fish bites and fishing out there in that whole Placida area and catching sheep's head, redfish. He got one nice mangrove snapper, you know, but all on that electric chicken one and just having a blast.
So you got pink and green or pink and yellow?
Yep. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, why not?
Just a little odd because usually that's a great color when it's really, really dark, nasty water.
No, it's usually when it's lightly stained.
Yeah. I've always done good with it in like August.
See, this is where when you're picking lures, people say, well, I just pick them kind of because I like them. I tried to tell this woman the other day, that's absolutely the best reason to pick that lure, because I fish pink in different watercolors than what you do, and what we find out is if you like the lure and you believe it'll work, you've got good odds of catching a fish because you'll use it.
True.
If
confidence.
You don't use the darn thing, it absolutely won't work.
Yeah.
And like I tried telling one guy, he was coming in, he's just coming in every week and buying a different lure. I said, but I think you're going about it wrong. I said, I appreciate you buying all these lures and stuff. It's nice, you know, and that's how I make a living. But I don't think you're doing yourself any favors. I think if you want to actually catch fish, pick one or two lures, at least maybe only two styles, or at least one style of lure. Learn how to use that style of lure. You can have a couple of different colors in it, but buying a twitch bait, then a swim bait, and then a crank, you know, I mean, you're going, he's going through all these different things, but he's never learning the nuances of that style of lure, right. Whether it's a paddle tail or whatever, crankbaits or whatever. You've got to spend some time with each specific style. See what works for you. You know, I keep going back to me and my dad.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the Gold Spoon and the Johnny Rattler versus the crankbait and the Walk the Dog.
Right.
And we both caught fish. Different lures, different colors. We caught about the same amount of fish. But I was good with mine. He was good with his. If I tried using the lures he was catching fish with, I never quite got that nuance for that damn Gold Spoon he used.
Yeah.
He could catch almost anything on it. Literally, almost any species of fish. And I struggled. But when he tried to use the stuff I got good with, same thing. He caught fish with it, but it wasn't like I could.
Right. Yeah.
So I still say pick a style lure, work with that, see if it works to your style of fishing.
Yeah.
And if it does, then you get different colors and stuff and different variations of that lure. But now you know you got something you can catch fish with. Mm-hmm. And then little by little you try other things. But trying a new lure, new style all the time, I'm just not sure that's getting you to the place. Because if you're not spending enough time with it, you're not going to ever get.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, absolutely it does.
I'm glad, because I lost it all about eight. At the last end, I was just falling apart going, you're babbling at this point.
No, that made sense.
All right, Lemon Bay.
Lemon Bay, let's see. They're still catching those baby gags all over on the flats. Still getting a lot of people asking questions about them. And then the trout have been doing mediocre to okay. That's what the guys have been, why they've been catching gags instead of trout. And then the redfish are still doing really good underneath the docks and even out on some of those deeper sand holes.
What is that now?
The redfish.
Okay.
And then still plenty of lizard fish in there that guys are catching all over the place inside. Had a couple guys listen to the report last week and actually told me they've been catching a few squirrel fish in there too, inside. You know, just up in the grass and underneath some of the docks while messing around with their shrimp. So it's kind of neat. It's always fun when they listen to the report and come in and give you extra feedback. So,
you know, it goes back to what I'm saying. Tuesday mornings with Robert, because everybody wants to talk to Robert. That's how I conceived of Robert's State of the Fish address. Every Tuesday morning, you know, he's going to tell you where they are, what you're doing. Come down, you get free cup of coffee, and if you want to, you know, grab a sandwich from Joe, our hot dog guy, who's usually out back here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. He's adding Tuesday mornings to the list so he can be here for Robert's State of the Fish address. Now, you guys, you just heard it. Everybody talks to Robert. It's just amazing. You know, that's why it's not Frank's State of the Fish address. That's why I'm not doing it. Everybody talks to Robert, all right? So, Englewood, Anger Pier, or the Tom Adams Bridge?
Just the Tom Adams Bridge has been the thing that's been going on. A lot of guys catching some sheep's head there along with some trout. And then at night, there's been some tarpon of some assorted sizes. One guy said he put four fish in the air right at sunset, and he said the biggest one was probably about 60 pounds. And he had saw him there the night before coming through. His buddy had repairs done on his boat or something, so they decided to screw around on the way in, and that's what they did. But he ended up going back out the next day because he wanted to really target them and was successful, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, targeting fish is a big thing.
Well, it's always Venice. Fun when it's a pleasant surprise, because, like, here I am just driving by with my buddy. Oh, look, hey, there's fish. I need to come back and try this.
How many times have we told people, don't get so obsessed with where you're going, you forget where you are.
Right, exactly.
Because all of a sudden, on the way to where you think the fish are, you just drove over more fish than to where you're going for.
Exactly.
Pay attention to where you are, you know.
Yep, right. Absolutely.
Let's see, Venice,
let's see, the jetties have been doing really good. They started catching some Spanish mackerel there. The sheep's head have been doing really good. A couple of redfish being caught there in the early mornings and the evenings. And then I had a guy catch four big, real big redfish off the Sharkey's Pier, fishing out there in the evening. And then he saw another guy catch, he doesn't know if it was a Spanish or a king mackerel, but he said it was about 2 foot long. And the guy ended up just taking it real quick and threw it back in the water, and the guy just said, mackerel. But he said it was an incredibly big, if it was a Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, we actually finally started getting Spanish mackerel out in front of Boca. A couple of guys, or one guy this morning, one guy yesterday, and then Josh and Mike this morning were talking about the Spanish mackerel just off the beach out of Boca and Gasparilla Pass, along with Mike saw and hooked a few bonita that were blitzing on the bait out there. And he said he was only a mile off the beach. So that's kind of nice, good news. And then offshore, getting out there quite a ways, because there has been a few nice days where guys were able to make it out. 80 to 110 feet of water is where the red grouper have been doing exceptionally well. And I mean, up to like 28 inches. I was talking to Donnie day before yesterday, and he went out on the full moon on Wednesday and took a friend of his who's lived here his whole life but had never ever been night fishing before out in the Gulf, and they caught mangrove snapper up to 4 pounds, yellowtail snapper up to 3 pounds, and a handful of lanes. They didn't catch any grouper legal size, but they were mainly snapper fishing. But the four of them on the boat had their limit by midnight, he said. And then they took their time just coming back, you know, enjoying the nice full moon and the relatively warm evening. He said it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things about this store is, you know, getting too cold, too windy, too rainy, too hot,
right,
too anything, and we just slow down dramatically. It's crazy how that works. But, you know, that's the way life is, you know. You just take the good days with the bad days, but...
We want to talk about warm Thursday. Okay. Was it? Yeah, Thursday. You brought me home early.
Yeah.
She got home about 5:30. We walked out back, and holy mackerel, the mosquitoes were terrifying. I mean, not bad.
A lot of guys come in last night.
Terrifying.
They've been out fishing when the nights were warmer, and they get overrun by bugs.
Oh my gosh! It was like almost like August in Chokoloskee.
Yeah,
it was bad.
Big business last night because of the guys going out night fishing, because it's been so bad with the mosquitoes and no seams and all that. They said the mosquitoes were the size of quarters out there.
Yeah, and they're quick. I mean, I'm watching them land on me and then hit, and you go to swat them and they're taking off, but I'm getting a welt. I mean, and they're hitting me that quick. She looked down, she had 5 of them on her leg. She actually gets bitten more than I do.
Really?
Yes, I swear. She's the first
one. I didn't know
that
was even possible.
She's the first one to get hammered before me. And but she had 5 of them down her leg, and I'm like, I'm watching them swarm my arms, my face. I'm like, oh, we're going inside. It's beautiful, but no.
And we heard that a lot, and last night you know, thank you, I made a lot of money last night. For everybody going out with the 60-degree temperature, it slowed the bugs way down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I say, weather-dependent. We get the right weather, we can rock in this store, make a lot of money, have a, you know, sell a lot of products. You get the wrong weather, and it just goes right in the, you know, Johnny. So, walking the beaches, what's going on out there?
The only spot I've had any good report on was Boca, right out there at Boca from the First Street, by kind of by the lighthouse, all the way down to the passes.
First lighthouse.
Yeah, which
the,
is
the skinny one, not
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that area there, they've been getting some whiting. A couple guys caught a couple pompano. One guy caught a little baby flounder. It was the size of his hand. He was holding it in his hand, and you could barely make out his thumb and his middle finger sticking out from underneath. It was pretty cool. The sheep's head are doing really good as you get closer to the pass. And then as you cast out a little bit further with some cut bait, their guys are still catching a few black tips, an occasional bonnet head, and still getting a few sandbar sharks. It's been pretty darn impressive out there. Yeah, but that's the only place I've been hearing any good report.
I wrote in Boca by the skinny lighthouse. I don't know what that other one's called.
Yeah, it's closest to, it's just past First Street. I know that, but I don't know the name of the park that it is actually there.
Yeah, I don't either.
So. Clicker doesn't work.
All right, hang on, Greg. All right, somebody else needed to return a reel. It didn't work. Yeah, that's why. It was funny. We had, you know, guys coming in and they were talking about, you know, oh, I got this on the internet and all that, and, you know, can you replace it for me? Really?
Right.
No.
Right.
No. You decided. Now, I've had people that have received gifts from family out of state that have sent them rods or reels or whatever, and if we could warranty them, we always have. But if you live in this area and you decide to buy on the internet, tough luck. Send right. it back to the guy on the internet you thought this was such a great deal from.
Right.
You know, we, you know, price match with Amazon and do stuff like that. And so if you just decide that you just don't want to come to the store and buy it because, you know, you want to sit in your underwear at 11 o'clock at night and buy a reel and then expect me to warranty it, not going to freaking happen. I'm not doing it. I don't care. I'm not a public service facility. You know, if that's, you want to buy your stuff on the internet, deal with the guy on the internet when you have problems. Not my problem. But the only exception to that that I do is we have a lot of regular customers who get stuff, and they have family members up north who have no way of knowing about us, don't know what we do or anything. And so they buy them stuff on the internet and ship it, you know, they get it shipped down to their house. And, you know, for that, I don't mind doing the warranty and, you know, helping them out. It costs me a little bit of money, but it's not, I don't mind that.
Right.
But for somebody who just, you know, okay, I don't want to deal with you, and, you know, I don't want you to turn a profit. You know, I want the guy on the internet to turn a profit, but you're going to take care of all my problems? I'm not your daddy. I'm not your brother. You know, mm-hmm. Not your uncle or whatever. I'm sorry. The answer is no. I mean, just like when you pray, kneel down, get next to the bed, close your eyes, you know, collapse your hands. And sometimes the answer is no, you don't get that prayer.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess I'm a jerk, but yeah, I'm a jerk. Can't help it.
No.
I just looked and I wrote flunder.
Flunder. Nice.
I was looking. Yeah, it's still not spelled right, but it's closer. Okay. Matt Lachey.
Well, Matt Lachey, they're still getting some sheep's head, and they started catching a few more snook down there. Other than that, it's been really quiet. I need to get a hold of Dee, ask her some more questions. She's always that good for...
Dee's awesome.
She fishes so much, but she talks to so many people down there.
Well, how do you not like Dee?
No, she's just a trip. She's just so happy-go-lucky. I like her.
Yeah, it's hard not to like her. I mean, yeah. She's just awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. Pine Island Sound.
Well, let's see. With lots of redfish along the bushes and some pretty good sized ones. And then they have been catching a few bigger trout down there, but not a lot. The guys that are throwing pinfish under a popping cork out there and drifting the flats have been picking up those bigger trout. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet. I haven't gotten anything else. All the guys that were fly fishing down there haven't even told me about any tarpon lately. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
It's been a weird week. I don't know, that full moon and warm weather's just got things tweaked.
Yeah, six years now, I don't have a clue. I don't know why. I don't know where. It's just, oh my gosh.
Well, it's like you said, you know, fishing's not great, but it's good. But you got to work at it, and you actually got to pay attention to what you're doing. You can't just go out there and not pay attention to what's going on. If something's not happening right there, look, see why it's not working, and then move down a little further and constantly change things
your
rigs, up.
Change your bait. Change whatever you're doing. But, yeah. You know, right now you've only got two options. You better be good where you can, you know, understand that you're going to have to change your rigs and then change your location and move around. Or you better be lucky.
Yeah.
Because if you're not lucky or good, you're going to have a hard time with this.
Absolutely.
And so, Jug Creek, Boquilla, north end of Pine Island?
Boquilla Pier is still doing really good on Sheepshead. A gentleman's still driving down there every couple days and catching some nice sheepshead off of there. He said his buddy's been fishing a little bit out of his kayak around the north end of the island there and doing the same thing, catching mostly sheepshead up against the bushes with an occasional little snook or a little redfish. But it's kind of cool how good that pier is doing this year, or at least how many reports we're finally starting to get from them this year.
Yeah, I mean, you got to pay to go out on it, but I can tell you there's a couple real nice restaurants. Was it Lazy Flamingo and a couple other ones on the north end of Boquilla?
Yeah.
If you haven't driven down there, from Fish and Frank's, you go south on 41, you turn right on Burnt Store Road, follow that down until you get to Pine Island Road, make a right over the bridge onto the island. When you get to the stop sign, make another right.
Yeah.
You know, and when it all ends, there you are.
Right.
You know, it's not like if 41 South, Burnt Store Road South, Pine Island Road to the west, when you get on Pine Island, there's an intersection. Turn right, go north. Or turn left and go down to St. James City. Mm-hmm. But for this thing, let's say turn right. And when you get to the north end of the island, if you drove every street there, you might spend an hour.
Right.
I mean, if you went on every road, you might. So, you know, it's not like you got to wonder, gee, am I going to be able to find this place?
Yeah.
It ain't that big, folks.
No.
Drive down there, look around, maybe go out to the pier and do a little fishing. Got to pay to get on it, but nice little pier. And there's some cool restaurants to do down there. Pine Island's a nice place.
It is.
Burnt Store Two Pines.
Mostly some redfish along the mangroves. That's about all I've gotten this week. But they're all in the mid to upper 20-inch range. Most of the guys are catching them on shrimp. A few guys are catching them on some pinfish that they're catching out there. And once again, a couple of guys have tried white bait with no success.
Now, I've got a few guys that are doing pretty good on white bait, but just like not, you say, it's sporadic, and it's all about how you use it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All about how you do it. Okay, east side.
East side, I got nothing this week over there.
Unusual, but acceptable.
Really unusual.
Alligator Creek?
Alligator Creek, I got... Jacks have been in there pretty good, and then the snook started to pick up a little bit more up kind of up by the sailboat by Gator Creek Marine. All through that whole stretch been a few more snook, and then a couple of oddball redfish. You know, I was talking, I did a talk at the Burnt Store Isles Fishing Club, and they said even behind their house in the canals the last couple of days have been kind of quiet. They hadn't been seeing or hearing much except for an occasional black drum grunting.
Yeah. Okay, Ponce de Leon.
Some small snapper, a couple of sheep's head, and a handful of jacks coming through. The snook are sitting there staring at everybody, but nobody's catching many of those. And then out front, there was one guy that he got one snook, one little redfish. He said it was a cute redfish. It was about 12 inches long. But he said overall it was pretty quiet. You know what I forgot to mention is two different guys offshore out in the Gulf. Both of them were like 20, 25 miles. They started chit-chatting amongst each other back there. They were catching puffer fish out there. Small ones. Like, he said both of them agreed that they were like maybe 4 or 5 inches, but couldn't figure out why they kept getting their baits just destroyed. And then they started catching puffer fish after puffer fish. And they were in two completely different areas. And one guy was up closer to like the boxcar area, and the other guy said he ran down south to the Mohawk and some of the rubble down there. But both of them were talking about the puffer fish that they were catching.
All right. Keep that in mind, but I want to get through this. We only got a couple more.
Okay.
PGI canals.
Snook. The snook are doing well. And the, jeez.
You want to live?
Yeah. Yeah.
You started coughing and your whole world went apart. Okay, Robert.
I could feel it.
We're going to hold that going around, and we're going to go back to the PGI canals. What's going on there besides snook?
Big jacks. Okay. Really big jacks. Carl took several customers in there this week because it was just a little slow. 15 pounds was his biggest one, and quite a few in the 10 pound range. And then a couple guys fishing up there closer to the Bass Inlet area have been getting a couple of black drum and a couple of sheep's head. A lot of guys are seeing the black drum, but only a couple guys are actually catching them. Strange part is I haven't heard of any tarpon in there at all. Wow. Nothing.
All right. Gilchrist spear?
Nothing. Crickets.
I actually had somebody text me crickets
really
yesterday, because, you know, I leave my phone on the desk when I'm out working with customers. I check it when I come back to the office. But they had texted me something, and then they're like some other emojis and some crickets and something else. And I'm like, A, this person knows I hate if you want me to do something or go somewhere or be, you know,
anything,
texting me about it instead of calling me and explaining what you want. And then they're giving me all these other emojis, and I had a WTF response, you know, like, really? You know,
yep.
You know, super aggravated and annoyed. It's like, you know, okay, I'm supposed to live with this thing. My phone was ringing in the background.
That's when you call them back and let it ring, and then if every smell kicks on, hang up, call back again, and call back again, and just, well, this is what it's like.
Usually what I do is if I need to get a hold of somebody, I'll call, let it ring, voicemail hits, I'll hang up, and then I'll call back, let it ring, voicemail hits, hang up. Now, if they see, okay, I called twice, they know it's something important.
Right.
You know, I don't get the whole, your phone tells you who called.
Right.
If it's somebody who I don't have in my phone I'm calling, I'll leave a message, you know.
But
right. Other than that, you look at your phone and go, oh, Frank called twice. All right, I got to call him back.
Right.
You know, ain't hard to figure out.
No.
So, Alligator Creek, reef.
A few sheep's head on there this week. A couple guys did actually catch some sheep's head and two short mangrove snapper. But the sheep's head they caught were like 16, 17 inches, so not too bad. Still pretty exceptionally quiet, though, this year for them.
All right. The deep holes in the harbor?
Got nothing.
Oh, I'm going to change that because I talked to one of the captains the other day, and he said there's actually quite a few small cobia.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good news.
I almost forgot about that, but he saw quite a few. He said it's not you know, he didn't see two, he saw a dozen.
Yeah, I know guys have been seeing some of the cow nose rays schooling up out there. But
anyway, freshwater.
Bass, definitely bass. Shiners have been the main thing, but guys are still buying a hodgepodge of lures. But the shiners have been key. 9 Mile Canal. Webb Lakes have been doing decent. And then quite a few guys fishing out there in Rotunda. But they're all, every one of them are talking about the bass, except for the one guy did catch a tilapia on a shiner out there in Rotunda. He said it was about a 4 or 5 pound tilapia, and it ate his shiner. He watched it eat it. Like, did you throw it in its bed? He goes, no, this one was actually just kind of cruising along the edge. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. I've never heard of one taking that big of a bait.
Yeah. Okay. Alright, bring up this other program. Okay. Size, red dot, the brush. Alright, any red dots for tarpon?
Nope.
Any yellow dots for tarpon?
Nope.
Any white dots for tarpon? Mm-hmm. Chance?
Boca Grande Pass, a couple guys spotted some out there rolling.
Where did the guy hook up with some the other night, you said?
Up at the north, up in the Mayak up close to the 41.
Okay.
But he said they thinned out so incredibly well.
Still a chance.
Okay.
You know, I got to put some dots here somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's...
Oh, the other guy was heading at the Tom Adams Bridge at night.
Okay.
Which, as warm as it is, I think it'd be a good time to go check the 41 bridge or El Jobin at night and see how it's doing. Because this is kind of what you and I have done in the past, but usually like late March, early April. Should be, seems like the temperature's right. Might be worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely possible.
Take a walk out on the bridge, maybe. Got family coming into town, so maybe talk them into taking a walk up on the bridge one evening, check it out.
Yeah. Alright. Let's see. Puffer fish in the Gulf.
Yeah. Like, deep though, you know, you're talking 30 miles out.
Yeah, I can. Do you ever remember that?
No, I don't. I mean, I've heard of guys catch them at like Mary's or Helen's or someplace, you know, 20, 25 feet of water, you know, close, but not very often. But for these two guys to start chatting amongst themselves and having virtually the same story going on, that was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, I can honestly say I don't ever remember puffers being in numbers where people would actually talk about it. Never.
No.
Out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Never.
Back in the flats and the shallows. Yeah. I mean, I get that. But not.
No. And, you know, over the years you hear of that one here or that one there, but they're usually like giant, you know, the big.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 10, 12, big, you know, 10, 12 inches.
Yeah.
You know, but these guys were saying that they were all like that 4-inch, 3-inch range.
All right, what's frying my cookies on this is not that just that they were catching a lot of puffers out there and smaller ones, which you just definitely don't expect. What's getting me about it is we've got squirrel fish in Lemon Bay.
Right.
And we've got lizard fish consistently along the beaches.
Yeah. It's like they did a habitat swap instead of like a land swap or wife swap on TV kind of thing. Hey, let's do habitat swap. You go to the shallows, I'll go to the deep. Let's check it out for a while.
It doesn't
make sense.
I got nothing for it. you know, we're going to have to think about it maybe next week on This Week in Fishing. We can actually try and figure that out a little bit more.
Right.
Got some time to think about it with RJ and all that. But I honestly don't have any memory of, you know, that ever happening before.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll give our biologist a call, Greg. See if he has any advice.
That would be a good idea, because we're going to... This is something I don't understand. I didn't even know it was possible. It's... Mm-hmm. I didn't... It's highly improbable. Of course it's possible. It happened.
Sure.
But...
But definitely strange.
Yeah.
I just... You know, it was funny, because they just started chatting about their fishing in general. The guy's like, yeah, I couldn't believe I kept getting robbed by pufferfish. And the guy's like, geez, me too. And then I finally started catching them. And then I realized what it was. And the guy's like, me too. And then they just, for 5 minutes, and I got sidetracked with another customer. But it was hilarious.
It's a good point. You know, when you come into the store, you know, hopefully you do. Hopefully, you know, you get a chance and you come on down to Fish and Frank's. One thing never to do is feel like, okay, I'm here and, you know, I got to stand here and talk to myself. You know, if you start up a conversation with another customer, you'd be shocked. We, you know...
Oh, it's awesome.
The hardest thing for people to understand is it's okay to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That we have the nicest clientele in the world. There is nobody that I've ever met like the people who come through this door. It's the only thing that's kept us here all these years.
Right.
And you'll be shocked. You can sit there and somebody's looking at a lure and say, you know, what's that for? What do you, you know, what kind of fishing do you do with that or whatever? And next thing you know, you're talking about all kinds of stuff, and half the people find out they're from the same place in the country.
Right.
That's the weird thing. Oh, yeah, I'm from, you know, Tom's River, and I'm from Bridgewater. You know, they're just like, oh, my God. You know, or they live 10 miles apart most of their life.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy. But when you come in, of course, talk to the guys behind the counter. And keep in mind, we cannot tell by looking at you if you've never fished or if you just won the World Redfish Cup.
Right.
We've no way to know until you talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, okay, I'm looking for this, looking for that, or I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that. And guess what? Every day of the week, we deal with somebody who walks in and says, well, I've never fished down here. I'm from up north. Really, it's for you, it's like this, oh my God, this is so weird. And literally, we deal with it every day of the week for
multiple
decades.
Times a day.
So we'll help you with it. It's not a big thing. So just kind of relax and say, hey, you know, I just got down here. Want to start fishing? What do I do? And Robert had a family. You had that family come in the other day.
Yeah.
And they wanted all new rods and reels, and they said, you know, we got this freshwater stuff. And they luckily they had it with them, and they brought it in. You went, no, that's fine. What's wrong with that?
Right.
It's not that much different than I would have sold you. Use it. You got it. Why are you spending more money?
Right.
Trust me, it's not about spending money in here. We're in the business of helping you have fun and catch fish. Period. We hope you buy some stuff, but it's not necessary. You know, it's not our goal in life. And our goal in life is, we figure if you're out catching fish, having fun, you're going to want to buy some other stuff.
Exactly.
But we encourage you, get a little bit at a time. Don't buy a lot of stuff. Get a little bit here, a little bit there. Once you're into it and you know what you're going to do, of course buy a lot of stuff. You know,
sure.
We like it. We like the money. But until you know where you're going, 9 chances out of 10, you're buying the wrong thing.
Right.
Let's find out where you're going, what you like to do, what your passions are, and we'll help you with that. But let's work together to figure this out. I had two guys in here the other day. They had their heart set. Somebody sent them a rod from Amazon, and it was a nice rod. And they wanted to know if I could return it. And I said, no, I can't. Because of the brand, we didn't have an in-store warranty on that brand.
Right.
But I went out, and I was talking to him, and I was showing him stuff. And we had found the exact rod. So we were playing with some of the stuff. I said, wait a minute, guys, look at my toys. And went over, grabbed some weights, and we're dropping some stuff on there. And the guy says, oh, I'm not getting another one of these. I want my money back. I want one of these and one of these. And then he's saying, can you get that weight and do this again? I want to try this rod. And kind of get all into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the only place in the world that we do what we do with trying to custom fit the stuff too. We have our own secret things that we do. It's not secret. We put a lead weight in the end of the rod.
Right.
But, you know, it's nobody else in the world does it because it's time consuming.
Right.
But if you're asking somebody to spend, you know, $50 or $200 or $100 on a rod, you should be willing to spend some time with them to make sure that everything's right.
Right.
If you're not willing to spend the time with them, why are they giving you that money?
Right.
It makes no sense to me.
Mm-mm.
Oh, the rods are over there. I'd literally be hanging on it from a noose on the rafters if that's the way I had to live.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not.
Where's the fun?
No.
Where's the entertainment? Where's the joy?
Those are the people that don't like to go to work. They're the ones that don't like to go to their job.
Yeah. It's kind of awesome when you're sitting there and these two guys have been buying rods all their life. They're in their, say, somewhere around 70.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you do something they've never completely unexpected, they never knew was possible, and you watch them get into it and they're like, oh man, this is great. They've never been able to do it before.
Right.
And they've always bought by the brand or by the whatever. And I try and tell people, it's not about the brand. The only reason you worry about a brand is you ask the question, does this have an in-store warranty or not?
Right.
That's the only difference a brand makes, whether it's a Shimano, a Pen, a Star, or whatever, Reaper, Shakespeare, whatever brand you like, you ask, does this have an in-store warranty or not? But then the rest of it is immaterial. Find the one you like. What do you care what the label says?
Nope, that's true.
Do you care what the brand name of the rod is if you really like it?
Nope.
Because to be quite honest, in another year, it could be out, you know, what says a Daiwa this year is going to say, you know, Shimano the next year. What says Pen this year is going to say Shakespeare the next year.
Yeah.
What do you care what the label says? Find the rod you like.
Yep.
The only importance on a label is, does that label allow an in-store warranty or not? And right. Does that matter to you?
Yeah.
That's the only thing about a label. Other than that,
yeah. Who cares?
But anyway, anything else you want to talk about? We got to get to work. I'm seeing a lot of people out there.
Is there?
Yeah. There's a. I'm looking on the cameras, and there's five people at the one register, and we got. There's more people walking around the lure room here. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Time to go do the fun stuff.
That's why there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I don't know, 20-some cameras around. I can watch. I'm sneaky. I'm overlooking. So, anyway, what did you say?
Time to go out and have some real fun.
Okay. Ooh, you're going to the real room.
No. Just nice. Cute.
Over to the South 40 where the real room is.
Yeah.
Remember Tuesdays, come in and listen to Robert's State of the Fish address. Tuesday mornings at 8 o'clock, free coffee, and you know, you might want to buy a breakfast sandwich from Joe. Nice fella.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll see you guys. The guitar music starts. I think that's it. This was the Area Fishing Report. You knew that because you clicked the button that says Area Fishing Report. So I'm really kind of redundant on that. Bye, Robert.
Bye, Robert.